Page 255. Sariputta's sense of gratitude. In the lifetime of the Buddha, there was an old Brahmin who, being helpless and uncared for by his sons and daughters, lived in a monastery attending to the needs of the bhikkhus. The bhikkhus were kind to him, but as he was very old, nobody wished to assume the role of an upajaya teacher and ordain him. He felt dejected and much run down for being thus refused admission into the Sangha. But knowing his potential for arahatship, the Buddha summoned the bhikkhus and asked whether there was anyone who had any sense of gratitude to the Brahmin. Then the elder Sariputta told the Lord how he was grateful to the Brahmin for once offering him a spoonful of rice during his begging round in the Rajagaha city. The Buddha said, "O Sariputta, would it not be advisable for you to help such a benefactor to attain salvation?" Sariputta promised to ordain the Brahmin, and before long the Brahmin Radha became a bhikkhu. Following the advice of Sariputta, the bhikkhu practiced the Dhamma, and in a few days he attained arahatship. Later on, the Buddha asked the chief disciple whether Radha was docile. "Yes, Lord, he is." "How many such docile disciples would you be able to accept?" "I would welcome many such disciples, Lord," replied Sariputta. Here the Tera Sariputta's sense of gratitude, even for a spoonful of rice, is indeed exemplary, and so is the docility of the old monk Radha. We should dispel ingratitude and be ever grateful to our benefactors. Emulating men of higher spiritual status. Palasa is to regard oneself as on an equal footing with very noble persons and to speak disrespectfully of them. It is the tendency to rival great men who are unique and peerless in intellectual and spiritual spheres. Some men have little learning, but they consider themselves on a par with learned scholars, of whom they speak irreverently. They contend that some sayadaws are not free from errors and ignorance, a contention that is designed to enhance their prestige. Some people have no moral character, and yet they consider themselves on a par with the saintly sayadaws. Some have little knowledge, but they do not care for a learned person. Some have never practiced meditation seriously, but they wish to look down upon those who have had many years' experience. Recently, some monks who join the order only in old age have gone so far as to challenge the scholarly and saintly sayadaws, insisting on the truth of their sayings and denouncing some teachings of the ancient books as erroneous. Their views are often taken seriously by ignorant people. Thus, these monks breed evil karma because of their misguided rivalry. We have now dealt with seven defilements, namely torpor, restlessness, doubt, ill will, spitefulness, ingratitude, and rivalry. Of these, torpor and restlessness can be rooted out at the arahata stage, ill will and spitefulness at the anagami stage, and the remaining three defilements at the sotapatti stage. These three defilements can lead to the lower worlds, and so at the very least it is imperative to seek the conquest of doubt, ingratitude, and rivalry. Envy, issa. Issa, or envy, is the feeling that one has against another person who is better than oneself. We do not want to see a man who is more prosperous and wealthy than we are. The average man does not want to see or hear of anyone who excels him in wealth, social relation, physical appearance, intelligence, or knowledge. We feel more envious when the object of our envy happens to be the person we do not love, or the person who is in the same profession, or have the same social status. Thus, a boy will envy another boy, a woman will envy another woman. There is envy among teachers, monks, and so forth. The rich are usually envied by the poor. In rural areas, villagers who work on their own farms are likely to excite the envy of those who are less fortunate. Government employees who do not get promotions envy those who are promoted. the great and the powerful cause envy in those who are of small consequence. The good speaker is envied by the poor speakers. Thus there are many causes of envy in human beings. In the final analysis, envy gives rise only to evil karma, without doing us any good. Envy makes a man unhappy, and so it is self-destructive. According to the Buddha's teaching in the Chula Karma Vibhanga Sutta, envy leads to the netherworld, and if reborn as a human being, the envious man will have fewer attendants and friends. Opposed to envy is mudita, or sympathetic joy of the four sublime states, the other three being love, compassion, and equanimity. Mudita makes us interested in the prosperity and welfare of other people. It is conducive to happiness because it makes us rejoice at the good fortunes of other people. According to the Chula Karma Vibhanga Sutta, rejoicing at the prosperity of others will make one reborn in the Deva world, and in case of rebirth as a human being, it, mudita, makes a man powerful with many attendants at his service. In cultivating loving kindness, the first of the sublime states, one should say, may all beings be free from dukkha that engulfs them. And to cultivate mudita, one should express the wish, may all those who are prosperous and happy continue to have the same good fortune. So through the cultivation of mudita, one can build up wholesome karma without spending a single penny. This good deed may lead to the Deva world and rebirth as a great leader with many attendants. On the other hand, envy causes evil karma. Without any benefit accruing from it, it leads to hell and a lonely life of poverty in the next existence. We should especially take care not to harbour envy in doing good deeds, in preaching, or in the practice of the Dhamma. To envy others who are doing many good deeds, who can preach sermons that have mass appeal, or have made spiritual progress in meditation, is to do little good, but much harm to oneself. So it is imperative to avoid envy in doing good things. Miserliness, macharya. Macharya is the desire to hoard up one's property in order that other people may have nothing to do with it. Its characteristic is described by the commentary as the secrecy with which one keeps one's wealth. The miser does not want other people to know what he has, let alone give his property to them. In the lifetime of the Buddha, when the youth, Mata Kundali, was seriously ill, his father kept him outside the house in order that his relatives and friends who came to see the patient might not find out what he had in the house. But on his deathbed, the young man saw the Buddha as the latter passed the house, paid his respect, and attained the Deva world in his next life. Later on, his father went to the cemetery and was mourning over his dead son, when the young Deva appeared and reminded him of something. Then the old man approached the Buddha and asked a question. The Buddha answered it and gave a talk. According to the Dhammapada commentary, both the father and the son attained Sotapatti stage and fruition after hearing the Lord's sermon. The story of Macharya Kosiya. The classic story of the miser in Buddhist tradition is that of Kosiya. He was so miserly that he was called Kosiya, the miser. He lived in a village near Rajagaha city. He was a millionaire, but he was so stingy that he did not offer even a drop of cooking oil to almsmen, nor would he use it for himself. Then one day, on his return from the royal palace, he saw a man eating fried food heartily, and there arose in him a desire to eat such food. But he did not wish any food to be prepared for his wife, let alone for the other members of his household, since that would mean a lot of rice and butter, etc. So because of his stinginess, he did not tell anyone about his desire. But the desire became oppressive, and at last he lay miserably in his bed. When pressed by his wife, he expressed his desire, and in compliance with his wish, the woman prepared to make food just enough for her husband. lest he should have to give food to those who saw him eating. The couple went up to the top story of the 7-story building, and there, with all the doors bolted, they set about to prepare the food. Then the Buddha, seeing their potential for the attainment of Sotapatti stage, sent the terror Moggallana. Moggallana went there and stood in the air near the window of the chamber where they were preparing the food. The millionaire was much shocked at the sight of the terror. He wondered how the terror had come to his hideaway and said that he, the terror, would not get any food whatever he might do. Moggallana performed miracles such as walking, sitting in the air, radiating plasmas, etc. He dared not challenge the terror to emit flames lest his house be burnt down. Just know, it does say emitting gases, but I don't think that sounds very wholesome in English. Then, knowing that the bhikkhu would not go away unless he got some food, the miser told his wife to prepare a small cake. But the cake became so big that it filled the frying pan. The miser tried to make it small, but every time he tampered with it, it became bigger and bigger. So the frustrated miser told his wife to offer a cake to the terror. But when the woman took a cake, all the cakes stuck together, and it was impossible to separate them. First, the miser tried, and then later, he and his wife tried separately to separate the cakes, but it was in vain. At last, tired and frustrated, the miser had no longer any desire to eat, and so he told his wife to offer all the cakes to the bhikkhu. Then Moggallana gave a talk on the karmic effects of almsgiving, dana, etc. The talk inspired Kosiya with so much faith that he asked the terror to eat the cakes in his house. But the terror said that the Buddha was waiting for food together with 500 bhikkhus, and with their consent he took them to Jetavana Monastery in Sarvati city that was 45 yojana away. It is said that Moggallana, having taken them there by means of his supernormal powers, they reached the gate of the Jetavana Monastery just as they passed the foot of the stair of their house. There, the merchant and his wife offered cakes, milk, honey, sugar, etc. to the Sangha. Originally, the cakes were made just enough for one person, but by virtue of the Buddha's supernormal powers, there was no end of the cakes after the Lord and 500 bhikkhus, the merchant and his wife, had eaten them. Even after the beggars had been fed, there were so many cakes left that they had to be thrown into a valley near the monastery. Then the Lord gave a talk, and after hearing it, both the merchant and his wife attained the Sotapatti stage and fruition. The nature of Macharya. The above story shows that Macharya, or miserliness, is characterized by secretiveness arising from jealousy of one's property. Moreover, Macharya makes one unhappy, discomforted, and mean if other persons have something to do with one's possessions. One who has much Macharya does not want another person to handle or use his property, as is borne out by writers and what we see in life. A jealous husband or wife will frown on anyone who looks closely at his or her spouse. He or she is wretched and cannot bear the sight of the spouse speaking pleasantly to another person. Not all is Macharya. But we should not call every man a miser simply because he does not give alms. A man may be called a miser only when he does not give alms, although he can and should do so. The reluctance to offer an immoral person something which is intended for a morally good man is not a sign of Macharya. When Udayi asked for the underwear of Bhikkhuni Upalavana, the latter refused to give it. Her refusal was due not to her miserliness, but to the impropriety of the request. Likewise, it is not majarya to refuse to give a person anything which he does not deserve, nor is it miserliness not to give away a thing which one adores, for this is due to attachment. The karmic effects of macharya. It is macharya when one does not wish to give things which one has more than enough. Some people never give alms in spite of their affluence. They hoard up all their wealth. They do not even share it with their families or use it for themselves. They also prevent others from giving alms. This kind of majarya has grave karmic effects. According to the Buddha's teaching in Chula Karma Vibhanga Sutta, it makes one helpless in the afterlife. It leads to hell and the lower worlds, and in case of rebirth in the human world, it causes poverty and suffering. It is said in the same sutta that the liberal, almsgiving man attains the deva world, and if reborn as a human being, he is rich and prosperous. The Brahmin Todaya, Chula Karma Vibhanga Sutta, is a discourse which the Buddha gave in response to the question of Todaya's son, Supa. Todaya was the chief of the 2D village, granted to him by King Pasanadi Kosala. He was a millionaire, but very stingy. His advice to members of his household was, a wise man should manage his household by bearing in mind the erosion of a whetstone whenever it is used, the growing in size of an anthill day by day, and the accumulation of honey by bees. The erosion of a whetstone, when we use it once or twice, is of little consequence, but when used repeatedly, it will eventually be worn away. In the same way, we may spend or give away our money bit by bit, but this may lead to much dwindling of our wealth in the long run. Bearing this in mind, we should be frugal and avoid almsgiving. This is implied by the first part of today's advice. It is a sound advice from the economic point of view. Rich and prosperous people are usually frugal, while on the other hand, some people are poor, largely because of their extravagance. In Burma, it is customary to celebrate pompously weddings and initiation, shinpyu, of a boy into the holy order. This may not affect well-to-do people, but those who do not have enough money and so borrow from other people and spend lavishly just to show off are in for trouble. Because of their overspending, some villagers found themselves heavily in debt after the initiation of their sons, and they were forced to mortgage or dispose of their carts, oxen, farms, etc. Then there are funerals of monks and pagoda festivals, to which villagers have to make monetary contributions reluctantly. These do not benefit them very much and are in part responsible for their economic distress. But from the religious point of view, we should give donations to worthy causes. In accordance with the advice of ancient sages, we should invest 1/4 of our income in business. Save 1/4 for the rainy day and spend the rest. Or we may adjust our expenses otherwise to the needs of modern times. Alms should be given to worthy persons. The initiation should be done within one's means. With a set of robes, a bowl, and food for the morning meal, it may be carried out at the monastery. Rich people may spend lavishly for such almsgiving. Is beneficial to the donor throughout his samsaric existence, the life cycle. but we should give alms according to our financial position. Todaya's advice is not commendable because he told his family not to give alms. He deprecated almsgiving as a waste of money. His reference to the collection of honey by bees is, however, noteworthy of note as it concerns purely the accumulation of wealth. True to his word, Todaya never gave alms, and dying with attachment to his wealth, he was reborn as a dog in his own house. The young man Suba was very fond of the dog. He fed the animal and allowed it to sleep in a good place. One day, seeing Suba's spiritual potential, the Buddha came to his house. The dog barked and the Lord said, "Hey, Todaya, you are now a dog because you spoke irreverently to me when you were a human being. Now you are barking at me, and so you will go to hell." Seeing that the Lord knew who he was, the dog became dejected and went to sleep on the ashes near the hearth. When Suba returned home, he learnt what the Lord had said about his father, and he was angry, for in the time of the Buddha, the Brahmins believed that when they died, they attained the Brahma world. So Suba went to the Buddha and accused the Lord of having told a lie about his father. The Buddha asked him whether there was anything that his father did not mention before his death. He said that his father told him nothing about the golden garland, the golden shoe, the golden cup, each worth 1 lakh of money and cash to the value of 1 lakh. The Lord told him to return home, feed the dog and ask the animal when it was about to fall asleep. He did as he was told, and crying, "The Lord knows all about me," the dog showed the place where all the things and the money were hidden. Fourteen questions. Then Todaya became convinced of the omniscience of the Buddha and asked the Lord 14 questions. Why do some people die young? Why do some live to an old age? Why are some sickly and some healthy? Why are some ugly and some good looking? Why do some have many attendants and some have few attendants? Why are some rich and some poor? Why are some born of high families and some of low families? We have referred to some of the Buddha's answers to these questions in our previous talks. We have now to say something about the rich and the poor. If a rich but miserly man does not give alms, he will not gain merit. It is not easy to avoid doing good deeds. But we live under conditions that expose us daily to bad temptations. We are greedy and covetous in the face of a desirable object. We may be tempted to steal, rob, or swindle. We have ill will at the sight of someone we hate. Ill will that arouses the desire to hurt or kill. Those who do not give alms will suffer in hell after death as a karmic result of their evil deeds. They are helpless because they have no karmic good to their credit that will save them from hell. They are like people who, having no friends and relatives, are at the mercy of their enemies. If, because of some good karma, they are reborn as human beings, they are likely to be wretched and poor. Those who give alms and share what they have with the needy can attain the Deva world in spite of their karmic evils, for these will be outweighed by their acts of dana. They are like a man who escapes punishment for his crime because of his prestige. If reborn in the human world, they tend to be rich as a karmic result of their previous almsgiving. So we should overcome Macharya and give alms to the best of our ability. Burmese Buddhists do not need such exhortation. They are very generous. The monks at this meditation center, numbering 30 or 40, go about to collect food every morning, and they get more than enough rice and curries. Even in time of acute rice shortage, the amount of food they collect is considerable. Most of these donors are not rich, but motivated by goodwill and faith. They somehow manage to offer food. They will prosper throughout their life cycle, samsara. Some are doing dana so many times that we have to restrain them.